to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Oh, man. Welcome back to the NXT Podcast. I am so happy you're here. My name is Zachary Smith. I am your host once again for an interesting episode of NXT to talk about. And whenever there's an interesting NXT episode to talk about, your boy is a very happy boy. And I'm a happy, happy boy. As always, off top, you can find me on Twitter. I'm ZachNXT. That's ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling over there, as well as a lot of different stuff. A lot of stuff from Twitter ends up on the show. So hit me up there. Otherwise, just sit back and relax and listen. Now, we do generally cover what's going on in wrestling, and I was thinking about it with some of Eric Young's comments. He debuted in Impact along with Heath Slater, who I want to say is just Heath now, and I believe EC3, as well as the Good Brothers, and Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows. And it got me thinking with Eric Young's comments about WWE and basically the lack of an actual creative process, that with things like this, if you heard it from one or two people, it could very easily be sour grapes. We've all heard the old timer or the person who left the company or didn't make it just complain because they didn't get their shot and they were great and the company just didn't like them, blah, 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 blah. You can tell when something is just sour grapes, right? A lot of guys from the Hulk Hogan era have this. This kind of, I could have been as big, if not bigger, so on and so forth. And you can kind of tell right away. It's just, you didn't get where you thought that you were going to get, and so you're mad about it. This is not the case here. Not only with Eric Young, but with FTR, and the biggest one, I think, was Jon Moxley. The sentiment coming out of all of those interviews, whether it's been on Talk Is Jericho for Moxley and for FTR, or just a statement, or rather an interview from Eric Young, the overwhelming majority of the stories that I hear about WWE is about their creative process. And I would recommend that episode of Talk Is Jericho with Jon Moxley, because he points out a lot of interesting things where, obviously, we know the promos are written out, but the fact that if there's a bad promo, the process to get that promo fixed seems like a nightmare, and I was exhausted just listening to it, much less having to do it myself. And you have companies like AEW or Impact where they're kind of just letting their wrestlers be who they want to be, and they trust them to do their characters. And you would think that WWE would want to adopt a similar philosophy, because that is how you get the best out of performers. That's why The Rock was The Rock, Stone Cold was Stone Cold, because they were them cranked up to 11, and they had freedom in how they portrayed themselves on television. They got talking points. They didn't get written promos. Roddy Piper couldn't be Roddy Piper with a written promo. Stone Cold couldn't be Stone Cold. Ric Flair couldn't be Ric Flair. And you run into a situation where it seems as though WWE tries to control everything. And it seems like their reasoning for it is that there are some people on the main roster, take a Kevin Owens or an Edge, who have a lot more leeway because they've quote-unquote proven themselves. And there's people, say, take a Shayna Baszler, where maybe you need to structure her more in their eyes. And that's fine to a degree. I think that if you have a person that is talented enough to make it with bullet points, then allow them to do that. I certainly don't think that you need to have every single person's promos written for them to such a degree that Jon Moxley, who was a member of the biggest faction of all time, maybe, and at least in modern WWE, and a WWE champion, and he's still doing 5 segments on a show, all of which are completely scripted, and now when he's in AEW, his promos are at a different level, and it's not because he's doing anything different, except he's allowed to be himself. You can take people who can't do that. Some people don't have that skill set, and that's fine. It's a skill set that you should definitely learn, but if you don't have it, that's fine. The WWE can work around that. But to put that on every single wrestler, that is part of the reason the product has felt stale for so long, and so many people's promos and just whole things come off as inauthentic and like a robot. That was the problem with Roman Reigns. That was the problem with Seth Rollins. That's been the problem with a lot of especially baby faces. That was a problem with Becky Lynch before she turned into the Man. It seems as though WWE's creative process needs an overhaul. And I wouldn't even say creative process so much as the person at the head of it, because as we all know, everything in that company, and I do mean everything, falls to Vince. Vince has the final word on everything. And believe me, he has absolutely earned that right, and he has shown that when he hits home runs. But the problem is he strikes out a lot too. And when he strikes out, it's ugly. And there's been a lot more strikeouts and missed opportunities lately than there have been before. And it seems as though maybe Vince is kind of aged out of this role. Vince McMahon was always obsessed with age. He wanted to replace Hulk Hogan with, was that guy's name Tom McDonald, who had the great match with Bret Hart? He wanted to replace Hulk Hogan because he was balding. He wanted to replace Jim Ross for years. You can find that in Under the Black Hat, Jim Ross's book. I listened to it on Audible. It's fantastic. They're not even a sponsor. It's just a fantastic listen or read. Where it seemed as though every year or so, there would be a new up-and-comer that was going to be replaced. Or Randy Savage wanting to be a wrestler again, and Vince just putting him on commentary because he didn't think it would be believable. Vince being the guy, Vince is the guy who is obsessed with age and how it affects you as a performer. It's one of the reasons he doesn't appear on TV very often unless he really feels like he needs to. And clearly he can no longer be trusted with that. Just check the Triple H celebration for that. I very highly doubt anybody's writing a word-for-word promo for Vince McMahon, and it was a bunch of nonsense. The best you're getting from Vince right now is what happened at Money in the Bank, where they come into his office and he tells them to get out. That worked because, one, it's Vince McMahon's office, but number two, because Vince didn't have to do a lot. And he's built this company from the ground up to where it is today. Not the ground up. He got it and built it to where it is today. And he absolutely deserves all of the credit in the world for everything that we are watching with WWE, be it Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, partially NXT. There's a great debt to Vince McMahon as it pertains to the wrestling world, but there's a lot of bad that comes with it. And now you have Vince, who's a much older man, who doesn't seem to have the same capacity to do this as he once did. That's what happens when you go and go and go and go and you never slow down. He's told people, he said, I wish that I could take a vacation sometime. But he feels like he can't because he's a control freak. And that's part of the reason he's been successful. But when you run yourself ragged like that, and you get older, I think that most of the time now, Vince just doesn't have it. And because Vince doesn't have it, the company doesn't have it, and the creative doesn't have it, and the writers don't have it, because they're just writing for Vince, who is frankly seemingly an out-of-touch guy who maybe doesn't make the best decisions anymore. And I think with Eric Young's comments to follow up FTR's and John Moxley's and a lot of people's, I think it's time to look at a change and to refresh the product. And I don't think that Vince is going to leave that chair until the day he passes away, and I certainly do not want that at all. But for Vince and for us, I think it might be time for him to relinquish some of, if not most of, those responsibilities. And I think we would see a lot of changes and a lot of WWE wrestlers. I'm sorry, WWE superstars. They're superstars. You're not fans. You're the universe. It would be better for everybody, unfortunately. I hate saying that, but I know what I watch every week. I'm obsessed with wrestling. You can ask my wife. If she come home from work, I'm going to be watching wrestling 100% of the time. I love it. I love WWE, but I've seen what's happened, and there's some good, but there's a lot of weird and bad. So, we're in a situation where it's no good, unfortunately. But, you know what is good? First is that transition, I know. But also, this week's NXT. So let's talk about it, or you listen to me talk about it, or I guess you could talk back if you want. I'm fine with that too. It is up to you. So we open with William Regal talking about Keith Lee winning the North American and NXT titles. And he says that Keith Lee has an announcement to make. And they're both just on video. It's not in the ring, which really takes away from anything they try to do like this when it's clearly just somebody on a recorded video call. But Keith Lee's sitting, looks like at a desk, with the NXT title on his left and the North American title on his right. Basically says, life is about making the most of opportunities. He said, while some call me limitless, I will not be limiting other people's opportunities. And he says, at this point in time, I relinquish the North American title to ensure other people get the same opportunities that I had, and as many people as possible have the chance to win this championship. Goes back to Regal, and he says, starting tonight, a series of triple threat matches will be happening, and the winners will go on for a ladder match at TakeOver in August. The winner becomes the North American champion, similar to the first NXT North American title match after it was created, with that fantastic ladder match from TakeOver that if you haven't seen, you need to go see, and if you have seen, you need to go see again. It's great. They teased for a few days that there was going to be a huge announcement on NXT. Couple thoughts. One, that's not a huge announcement that the person who holds two titles is relinquishing one and that there's going to be a tournament. Because we just did that with the Cruiserweight title. So it's not something new. Obviously, the North American title is a much bigger deal than the Cruiserweight title. No offense to the Cruiserweights. But that's not what a huge announcement is. That's just not the proper use of that terminology. But also, I'm of two minds. One, I agree with Keith Lee that this is going to give opportunity to people that otherwise now wouldn't get it, because if he, being Keith Lee, is wrestling for the NXT title on a TakeOver, chances are he's not going to have two matches, and so this gives more people more opportunity. However, being that he just won it 2 weeks ago, it's odd that this history-making moment where he's a double champion is already over and kind of feels odd. It seems like WWE, or rather NXT, would have gone with the traditional way to do this, which is if the Intercontinental Champion is going to win the WWE Championship, generally, the majority of the time, they will lose the Intercontinental title first. And I understand they wanted that historic moment, and I love it for Keith Lee, but it definitely feels weird and lesser than with him relinquishing it 2 weeks later. Again, I have no problem with him as a person relinquishing it. I have a problem with the decision to put both titles on him, keep the North American title on him when he didn't need it, and just do this historic moment to get the praise of a historic moment, but we're going to go ahead and take that other one off of him. So, I guess at least on the bright side, NXT still has a champion in Keith Lee, and we're going to get a cool tournament after. So, you know, not a monumental tournament, nor was it a monumental announcement, but I will certainly take it. Should be a lot of great matches, and if that ladder match can be just about as good as the first one, then we are in for a treat, and it's a perfect opportunity to make somebody, and that's a big part of what wrestling's all about. We cut to the Performance Center. Dexter Lumis is out first. Still love his theme music. Still love his whole vibe as a character. This guy is quite literally perfect for this role or this character. Samuel Shaw being his real name. He was also in TNA for a time where he played something, kind of an offshoot of this character, which never was my favorite, but it seems like Dexter Lumis is an evolution of Samuel Shaw, and I think that's a cool part of the story. So he comes out, and then Killian Dane is out. This match was set up by the illustrious Robert Stone, agent extraordinaire. This should be very fun. I'm very glad Killian Dane is back. They obviously did nothing with him on the main roster as part of Sanity. Don't know why you'd call him up if you weren't going to do anything with him, but I gave up trying to figure that out a long time ago. So here we are. But he's back in NXT where he should be. Killian Dane goes to Irish Whip Lumis at the steel stairs at ringside, but Lumis jumps over them, kind of jumps and rolls and lands, and then he's just on one knee. That looked really cool. I just couldn't remember having seen it before, or at least recently. I think AJ did it in one of his matches with John Cena, and it always impresses me. And as always, Payne doesn't seem to bother Lumis. It doesn't seem to hurt him. He always just seems annoyed that someone's hurting him, and he's annoyed at his own body for having the audacity to feel pain, which is a very interesting way to do that, because Dexter Lumis is a great seller when somebody's attacking him, but he doesn't sell what I would call traditionally. He doesn't reach out to the crowd. He doesn't yell and scream. It's understated, and it seems like the kind of guy it's going to take a lot to really hurt him. But come that time when somebody does, it's going to mean more. Also noted that Dexter Lumis always wrestles in pants, and it got me down a rabbit hole of thinking, I wonder if wrestling in pants is as uncomfortable as it looks like it would be. I mean, they look better to me than just, like, short tights, but certainly not comfy. Like, I would wrestle just in pajama bottoms. That's what I would do, because I'm going for maximum entertainment, but also maximum comfort, you know? But it seems like when Dean Ambrose would wear jeans or Dexter Lumis with pants, it always feels like that would be uncomfortable. Or John Cena in jorts, it just feels like it would feel weird. But then again, I'm the guy that would wrestle in pajama bottoms, so, you know, what do I know? Dexter Lumis hits a swanton from the top rope, then a side slam into the choke, and Killian Dane passes out. It was a really good match. I liked it a lot. Roderick Strong is interviewed after, backstage, about his opportunity to qualify for the North American title match. Says that he was never really given his rematch for the North American title, and that Undisputed Era should get that chance. And he's interrupted by Bronson Reed. He says the Undisputed Era has had plenty of chances. I always, 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 always forget that Bronson Reed is Australian. So when he first starts talking, because I'm not expecting it, it takes me a minute to catch what he's saying because I'm like, wait, what's that accent? It's Australian. Oh, right, Bronson Reed's Australian. And then the next time I see Bronson Reed and hear him talk, same thing. You think I would have committed that to memory by now? I haven't, though. It hasn't. It certainly hasn't happened. Johnny Gargano interrupts. This is now feeling like Raw a little bit. Tells Bronson, welcome to my world. He says, you better watch out, thick boy, as he looks at Bronson Reed's shirt that says thick boy, thick with two C's, get it right. Hearing Johnny Gargano say thick boy is hilarious. Coming out of his mouth is just great. It's dorky, and I love it. So these three will compete in the first triple threat match later tonight. Winner takes the first spot in the NXT North American title ladder match. Come TakeOver in August. We get a Dakota Kai video. She said it felt good to kick Io off that pedestal she put herself on. She said, when you're finally able to get back up, come to the ring and bring that title with you. And so obviously that'll be the next title defense for Io Shirai. That'll be a really good, really hard-hitting match. It'll help Dakota Kai the same way it helped Tegan Nox. Dakota Kai's not winning the title, I don't believe. So it's one of those that's a foregone conclusion, but you're trying to make people. And as I talked about last week, Io Shirai is a perfect champion for that. Whereas Charlotte Flair, because of the way that they wanted to use her, Charlotte Flair's capable of putting people over, but the way that they use her is as somebody who just simply does not put people over. Even if she loses, she doesn't put people over. And that's not her. That's the way that WWE uses her. But now we have Io, so all is good. Dominik Dijakovic's being interviewed in the back. He says that Karrion Kross is getting a fresh Dijakovic. He said he tried to take me out last week, but he didn't. And now I'm here. He's got a fresh Dijakovic. He seems real mad, and I like that fire, but he going to lose. So Johnny Gargano is out first for this triple threat match. Without knowing who's going to win, I felt like Bronson Reed for this match for some reason. I felt like with a good showing, he could kind of be made. This wasn't for the NXT North American title, so I thought that there was a chance that Bronson Reed would take this and move on to the ladder match because I think he adds something really cool to that match. And it's a chance, again, to make somebody who they haven't done a lot with. And I think that's the perfect way to do it, is make him feel important. Bronson Reed's out next. He has a really cool look. He's very different, and he's a really good wrestler. On top of that, that always helps. Roderick Strong comes out last. He's by himself. Usually one or two members of the Undisputed Era, his faction, will walk him down. This time he's by himself. This seems to me like a match of three guys where I don't know where they are or where they're going as of right now. They feel kind of aimless. Johnny just got done with a program with Keith Lee, and Roderick Strong just got done with Dexter Lumis, and Bronson Reed just got done getting beaten up by Karrion Kross. So this is three guys who don't have a ton going on storyline-wise at the moment. So I'm sure that'll change within a couple weeks, but it was interesting that they didn't really know what to do with them, and they put them all together, but it makes for really good matches, so that absolutely helps. It's a really fun match, and Bronson Reed wins, and he moves on to the ladder match. He's the first man, so there's going to be four other men in that ladder match. We'll get our next triple threat match next week to get another competitor there until we have all five. I imagine it feels like there's going to be a surprise in that match. I don't know, but we'll see. Bronson Reed already feels like a bigger deal than he did going into that match and kind of a legitimate threat to win it all, although I will agree an underdog. I don't think he'll win, but I certainly won't be disappointed if he does win, which is a great place to be. He's a big guy who is real strong and can wrestle real well. And he can talk from the little bit that I've heard. And that's a rare combination, especially for a big guy. So I'm excited to see what he does in this ladder match. And what he does going forward with that kind of elevated platform that he should have if everything goes to plan, or at least the plan that I have in my own head. But, I mean, we'll see. So, next we got Timothy Thatcher taking on Oney Lorcan once again. It's going to be a lot of fun. Timothy Thatcher's out first. He's just a no-nonsense butt kicker, and I love it. He always looks like he was just, like, just told backstage right before he went out that, like, his doctor called with his test results, and the doctor wouldn't tell him specifically, but just said the results are bad, and then his music hit. It's just a great look he always has on his face, just almost permanently. I'm surprised Thatcher came out first, because Oney Lorcan comes out next. Again, as I've said, he's a great Twitter follow. I mean, he's no me, you know what I'm saying? But he's super intense in the ring, and he's a perfect opponent for Thatcher to fight and to lose to Thatcher. Oney Lorcan's just a fighter, man. He's just a dude who will get in there and fight you. And you need that. And hopefully they can utilize that more and not just in tag team matches. There's a lot of mat wrestling and catch-as-catch-can style wrestling, just holds and holds and holds and leverage, which is to be expected. It's not always my favorite style of wrestling, but these two are so good at it, and it doesn't often happen that you get two wrestlers that are great at it. It's usually just one, but they're both really good at it, and in WWE, it's very rare to see a match like that. So it really kind of sets this match apart and makes it stand out. So it made me really like it. As long as you tell a story and it's a good story, especially in the course of a match, I'm going to be down. It was at this point in the match that it occurred to me that Oney Lorcan is Timothy Thatcher if he were to shave his head and chest. And now I can't unsee that, and neither can you. So that's just something I want you to keep in mind, that Timothy Thatcher is fighting his younger cousin at a family get-together. And that's just something we both know and we're both going to have to deal with now. And this is the kind of hard-hitting information that you listen to this show for. This is it. This is the stuff here, people. This is the meat and the potatoes is keen observation. Where else are you going to hear that? Nowhere. Did your favorite wrestling podcast mention that? Bet they didn't. So, you know, I'm just saying. I do hope it almost seemed like they were going to pair these two together somehow. Not as a tag team, but maybe like an alliance of some sort. Just because they're so similar and they seem like the kind of guys that, like, you can earn Thatcher and or Lorcan's respect by having a real good fight. I don't know if they're going to go down that road or if they need another match. I think Thatcher's won two in a row. Doesn't seem like you need another one, or if they're both just going to move on. I'm not sure, but either way is fine with me. Also occurred to me that sometimes when Timothy Thatcher is selling a move, or selling the pain after a move, he looks like he's about to cry, and he's begging his significant other to give him one more chance. And I love that. I love that I typed that as a note. That's a note. That's written in my notes to make sure that it was so important to me that I didn't forget to tell you that Timothy Thatcher sells like a boyfriend telling his girlfriend, please, babe, I didn't even care about her, I love you. That is in my notes. And if you think I regret it, you don't know me at all. So, Timothy Thatcher gets the win, as expected. This has been a fun mini-feud. Oney Lorcan actually did a lot for Timothy Thatcher. He made Timothy Thatcher look really good. Timothy Thatcher is really good, but he needed a good dance partner to get him warmed up. And you don't want to do just enhancement matches. You've just been doing a lot of those with Karrion Kross. So you don't want to do that. But this was a good kind of mini feud where Oney Lorcan is the enhancement talent, but you don't really realize it because he's a guy that you've seen before. Pardon me. So it kind of worked out good for both of them, I think. And obviously I'm interested in where Thatcher goes from here, but I'm also interested where Lorcan goes from here. He's never really been featured for much as a singles wrestler, except as an enhancement guy, as he was here. But I think that there's something there with him as a singles wrestler, and not just a tag team with Danny Burch. That's a fun tag team, but I think that Oney Lorcan just being this no-nonsense dude you can picture in a pub starting a fight just because he felt like it kind of guy, that seems like it could and should be something. And I hope that they go forward with him and just utilize him more, because I think he always delivers. I've never seen him not deliver. We get a video of Finn. It's going to be him versus Dexter Lumis versus Timothy Thatcher next week. Another triple threat to determine who goes on to the ladder match with currently Bronson Reed. I'll take one Dexter Lumis, please. I don't necessarily think that Dexter Lumis is going to win, but he's one of my favorite wrestlers in NXT, or rather characters in NXT, and I'd love to see what he would bring to a ladder match, because he seems like the kind of guy character-wise that likes hurting people, and the kind of guy that doesn't spend a lot of time on ladders. I don't know why he gives me that vibe, but you tell me that. Go ahead and picture Dexter Lumis on a ladder. Not Sami Shaw, not the real guy. Picture Dexter Lumis on a ladder, just like doing housework. You can't, right? And I always think it's interesting. That's why it was always interesting when Kane was in a ladder match, because also, funnier one, picture Kane full mask, like cleaning out the gutters at his house. You almost can't do it, can you? He gets mad, punches down on the gutter, flames come out of the gutter. You get it. The Kane jokes. But I'll take Dexter Lumis, pretty please, because as you know, WWE takes my opinion into account for all of their decisions. Karrion Kross is out next. His entrance is still great. Scarlett adds so much to this gimmick. I really don't think it would work at all without her, so kudos to her. I mentioned this last week, and I'm sure I'm in the minority. I am not really a Karrion Kross guy. I don't dislike him. I just don't think, oh my gosh, he's so cool and great, and I want to see him win every title. That's just not, he doesn't do it for me yet. I love the intensity in the ring, and I love the entrance. I don't love the vignettes, and I don't love it when he talks, because he just says TikTok. And it doesn't come off as intimidating to me. It comes off as somebody who is trying to be intimidating. And there's a very big difference between somebody who is intimidating and somebody who wants to be intimidating. And that's not an indictment on the person portraying the character. Just for me, that's how it always comes across. And even when he's beating up Dominik Dijakovic, you know, last week, it didn't come across. But it does come across in this match. So we have Dijakovic out next in what I believe is going to be his last NXT match. No doubt losing, putting somebody over, as is the tradition in wrestling. And for the most part, that's a good tradition. I mean, you'll have situations like The Undertaker where he wins his last match because he only works WrestleManias and they don't want to have him lose again. Although, at this point, it doesn't really matter. As soon as he lost to Lesnar, that kind of lost its mystique. But that's not the point. Dijakovic has been great for NXT, kind of an unsung hero. He always seems to get the best or near that out of everybody that he's had a program with, and that's really hard to do. They go face-to-face, and Dijakovic is taller than Karrion Kross, which I just thought was funny, because there's this intimidating Karrion Kross to TikTok, and then Dijakovic has to look down at him. And we start with a collar and elbow tie-up when this dude tried to kill you last week, which I always think is funny to me in feuds like this where you have like a blood feud or two people that hate each other and they circle each other in the ring and they're talking smack and lock eyes and then collar and elbow tie-up, brother. It's always weird when they don't just start with punches like that. I 100% of the time will giggle, and I do mean giggle when that happens. I'm honestly surprised that Karrion Kross is still in NXT. He seems like the prototypical guy that Vince would see the one time a month he watches NXT, if he's not already more involved. He would see Karrion Kross, see his physique, and be like, yep, I want him on the main roster right now. I'm surprised he didn't get like taken like Lars Sullivan. Although I imagine if he were taken up, he would actually, you know, appear on television. While Vince found him in NXT, it seems as though maybe he didn't know about some of the comments he made online when he was stupid and younger, hopefully, and he doesn't still believe that, and some of the stuff he said about Stephanie McMahon, who happens to be Vince McMahon's daughter, hence that similar last name. So I don't know if that had something to do with it, but point being, Vince has a habit of seeing a guy and falling in love with him, and I'm surprised that hasn't happened with Karrion Kross yet. It might have, and they're just going to try and tell this story. It seems like Dijakovic is getting a lot more in this match offensively than any of Karrion Kross's opponents thus far. I mean, it makes sense. You still need Dijakovic to look strong if he is moving to the main roster. You need him to look like a threat. And Dijakovic is just throwing Kross around. I haven't seen much of that at all. And Kross is a better seller of moves than I thought that he would be. And obviously that's a function of Karrion Kross had a bunch of enhancement matches and then had one match with Tommaso Ciampa where Ciampa didn't get much in at all. And then had a pretty good Haas fight with Bronson Reed, but he quickly took over and beat Bronson Reed. This Dijakovic is the first person that really seemed to test him a bit. And so at the end of this match, Karrion Kross throws Dijakovic into the steps. He pushes his head into the steps, kind of with his boot, goes back in the ring, lets the ref count for a bit, and then goes back out. Dijakovic appears to have his head kind of resting in between the ring apron and the steps, kind of knocked out almost. And he basically kicks the steps where Dominic Dijakovic's head was. So basically ramming the steps into Dijakovic's head, which also would knock the back of his head. And then Kross just drags him back into the ring. And so could have won by count out, but didn't want to do that. So Kross is holding Dijakovic's arm down, and he's hitting him with some pretty vicious-looking elbows as he's darn near defenseless, and I was surprised they didn't stop the match. But Keith Lee comes to ringside, and Karrion Kross gets up for a second and looks at Keith Lee. He gets back down while looking at Keith Lee, and he's punching Dijakovic. He stops for a minute, and Dijakovic rolls over on his stomach and looks at Keith Lee and is shaking his head no. I imagine, like, no, I don't need help. Like, whatever happens, let me finish this. Kind of Apollo Creed, don't throw in the towel thing. Although, for the record, Rocky should have thrown in the towel. Like, you could be mad at me later when you're not dead. Throw in the towel. Throw it. I don't care if you're mad forever, throw it. Rocky should have thrown that towel. If you think he shouldn't have thrown in that towel, you're wrong. That dude died, and Rocky could have stopped it with a towel. Rocky's a bad person, confirmed. So, because he's not giving up and he's not really able to fight back, Karrion Kross hits more elbows to the face and locks in the chokehold, and both men are looking at Keith Lee. Dijakovic is still shaking his head no, and Kross is just looking as menacing as he can at Keith Lee. So Dijakovic passes out, Keith Lee gets in the ring, and Kross backs off. This is good. It makes Kross look like a bad dude, like a strong dude, but also for Dijakovic, it took Karrion Kross battering his head with the ring steps to beat him. So it still makes Dijakovic look strong going forward. So I like that. So Keith Lee gets in the ring, and Karrion Kross kind of backs up to the other corner, just staring at him. Keith Lee's on one knee, and he's giving Kross the death stare. And looks like we have ourselves an NXT title match. It's always weird to me in situations like this. It's weird that Keith Lee didn't attack him. And it's almost weirder that Karrion Kross didn't attack Keith Lee. But I get it. They're building it. But it's always weird to me when those dudes are... When dudes are or women are supposed to be super mad at each other if somebody just did something despicable, and then all you do is stare at them. Or if, like, a heel is retreating, if a bad guy's retreating from the ring, and the good guys walk up to the ropes and will usually stand on the bottom and middle ropes and just be like, come on, come on, well, why don't you just go get them? So it was weird to me, excuse me, it's always weird to me when people just kind of stand there, but I do get the storytelling element there. So it's an interesting way to escalate the Keith Lee Karrion Kross feud. It's now not just about the NXT title, but it's now very personal, and Karrion Kross went too far with Dijakovic, and he did it to make a point. And he wanted to make sure he had Keith Lee's full attention. It's one thing to put the hourglass down. It's quite another to take your kayfabe best friend and try and put him out of commission one week and then seemingly put him out of commission the next week. And so the refs all start calling for help as we kind of go off the air. So that seems like that's going to be our next program. It should be a good match, but I'm not super de-duper excited about it. Just because, number one, Keith Lee's been NXT champion for a couple weeks now. I think it's way too soon to take the title off Keith Lee. So I would think he would win. Also, I don't think Karrion Kross is the type of character that's actually going to be interesting with the title. I think if he wins the title this fast, I think we're just going to get this character. And I don't think this is the final character of Karrion Kross and Scarlett. I think this is the beginning of a character. And again, that's not anything against Karrion Kross or Scarlett. It's just how they're presented, where they're very one note to me. And I don't mean this to sound like entitled wrestling fan. It's just the feeling I get all the time. And so I feel like it's kind of a one-act play that is going to stay a one-act play if he wins the NXT title. So it feels like it's interesting because if Karrion Kross loses, you feel like he's going to go to the main roster, or I do, rather. If Keith Lee loses, that would be annoying. But if Keith Lee loses, then you would think he'd be on his way to the main roster. So it's kind of a loser leaves NXT match to me in my head. That might not be true, but that's how it feels. And Keith Lee's beyond ready for the main roster. And the problem is, I think Karrion Kross needs a considerable amount more time in NXT without the title, and then you can build him up to that. I think it's soon to give him a title match. I understand the story they're telling. He's been on a tear. He really only faced Ciampa and Bronson Reed. The rest were like Leon Ruff and enhancement talents, but he still hasn't lost, and now he's made it very personal with Keith Lee, so he's going to get that title match. But it's not really a feud that does it for me. But I mean, if the end of this is Keith Lee goes to the main roster to fulfill that destiny that was started at Survivor Series and continued at the Royal Rumble, I'm fine with that. If Karrion Kross goes up to the main roster, Vince is going to love him, so he's going to be successful, as is Dominik Dijakovic. So all in all, whatever does happen, I think that there's going to be bright spots with it. And when it does happen, you know you're going to hear about it here with your old buddy Zach. Now, with the refs calling for help from the back, NXT goes off the air, which means I go off the air in just a second. I just want to thank you again for joining me. And I want to remind you, I'm on Twitter, ZachNXT, ZachNXT. I'm always over there talking about wrestling with my friends. We bat ideas back and forth. We darn near live tweet and comment on pay-per-views. We had a lot of fun with some of the horror show at Extreme Rules stuff. And it's just a really fun conversation. And if you have questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to see taken out or done differently or added to the show, I'll take under consideration. A lot of what we say and talk about on Twitter ends up in the show. It's a lot of inspiration for me, and you get to be a part of it. This isn't just me, this is us. I'm just the super handsome host with the cool voice. You know? You're the brains behind the operation, so come be the brains. It's Zach NXT, ZachNXT. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is my time for this week. Thank you for listening once again, and I will catch you next week. Enjoy the rest of your day. I've been Zachary Smith. You've been great.